You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In full swing, that means another great week of podcasts. Welcome to Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Brendan Kleen. I write about the Suns at SB Nation and Forbes, as well as the NBA at Dime and FanSided. Could not be more excited for today's episode. We have one of my colleagues, the great Robbie Calland of Dime and Uproxx, a senior sports writer there, who wrote about the Suns as part of his kind of off-season recap, season preview series. So some interesting thoughts about this team, about really like what it means to go all in, what it means to make the move, like the we're done rebuilding move and we are going to try to compete move, and what it says about the Suns' identity and what they want their identity to be, that they made that move, Chris Paul, a trade for Chris Paul. So we'll get into all of that with Robbie. A really great conversation, including a little bit on if Devin Booker is, if we can see in the not too distant future a situation in which he's a player you can build a win a championship with as your best guy, or what's the Suns' pathway to that now that Paul's here and sort of the era is new. Hope you guys will tune in for that. I'm excited. Before that, though, as I said, NBA Media Week, yet another adjustment in 2020 to the NBA calendar, but pretty interesting because rather than everybody kind of tired and pissed off talking to the media all day for a whole day, we're getting five mornings of content, well, five mornings of press conferences, virtual press conferences from these guys. So James Jones started things off Monday talking about the offseason, the compressed week-long offseason, and what he was able to put together as far as this roster. And I wanted to hit on a couple things that I think were interesting. Most importantly, the first one being a couple comments that he made about the types of people that he looked for building out the roster. I thought it was interesting that he made a point to say that it didn't take a whole lot of convincing for guys to come. And you know, I think James Jones is a guy who's pretty selective with his words. He understands the magnitude of saying something like that, the importance of, after so many losing seasons, to kind of make a point of saying players want to play in Phoenix. And I don't know how much you necessarily believe all of that. Obviously, money talks a little bit here, right? But like, we talk about this, Robbie and I, later in the show, and I think, you know, you don't get a guy. First of all, let's set this straight. Like, obviously, the fact that Chris Paul wanted to come here and set his sights on Phoenix in the trade discussions is humongous. So, I mean, that's first and foremost. The fact that Sam Presti, the Thunder GM, basically allowed Paul to seek out a trade on his own, knowing that they were going to be moving into a rebuild, and that Paul was able to find and identify the Suns as a team he was excited to go be part of is humongous. But other than that, like, Jay Crowder is another big one. He's been on winning teams his whole career because of how he started his career with Dallas at the end of the Dirk era and then into Boston. He's basically never been on a bad team, and so that's obviously a sign that the Suns are thought of that way, at least as an opportunity to go contribute to winning. Yes, a three-year deal for $30 million almost is great, but Crowder's probably not thinking about the Suns unless Paul's here and Booker's here and there's some momentum toward success. So I believe Jones to that degree. It just kind of, the proof is in the pudding here. I think even Etuan Moore, like taking a minimum to come here, those are the types of players that once you're on a minimum, you can pretty much go anywhere. So if he wanted to go to the Lakers or whatever, obviously he probably had some other offers or opportunities out there potentially on a minimum contract, but he liked the chance to play a meaningful role on this team. So all of that is really impressive. I think what it made me think of, though, is, you know, this market, this organization, for all of the problems that it's faced lately over the past decade or so, is an appealing market still. And I don't want to be the Knicks voice here and try to keep every summer convincing people that players want to come, but it's true. I mean, the renovated arena, new practice facility, all that's nice. But at the end of the day, like, Phoenix is a nice place to live. We know that that does play a part in decisions and has played a part in the decision for some players to come to Phoenix in the past. In every league, it's a nice place to set down a family. A lot of people own houses here. Anyone who lives in the Valley or has been a Valley sports fan knows all that. So it just made my brain start to think that way a little bit when Jones was discussing that stuff, because it could come into play again. If the Suns will make the playoffs this year or, you know, make obvious strides forward, I think we could be starting to think about that stuff again. And the power of this market could, you know, flex itself a little bit again. And that's just something to bear in mind. It was something I was thinking about. The only other thing I wanted to highlight from James Jones' press conference was a quote that he said as far as position battles. It was a question that I actually originally asked him about campaign, like with a guy who was out of the NBA and then comes into the just to the bubble and then plays out of his mind. Like, how do you handle something like that as far as setting guidelines, setting expectations for pain going into training camp? And it ended up in a little bit of a different place when James answered it, but I appreciated it. And Kellen Olson tweeted it from Arizona Sports. He said, it's going to happen by committee. Outside of Devin and Chris, the rest of our team, those guys are fighting to establish an NBA identity. They've had some NBA success, but they haven't established an NBA identity. My hope is that by committee, we can establish a collective identity that supports those two guys, being Booker and Paul. And that really, as much as Jones outlined like a guiding principle for how he's operated this offseason, that was it. And it was just an interesting kind of distillation of how he thinks about this stuff, because with the amount of shooting, and I wrote about this at Forbes, it's on my Twitter account if you guys want to check that out, about just how much the increase or upgrade in shooting can really put this offense over the top this season. And when you think, like, Booker's already proven what he can do and what he needs. All you need is give him some space, give him some guys who can get him the ball in rhythm, and he's going to go to work. So we know that. You know, now he has one of the best to ever do it, giving him the ball, setting him up in Chris Paul, and as much shooting as any roster in the NBA. So from that standpoint, James Jones's point is perfectly well taken. And, you know, Chris Paul doesn't need a ton to succeed, but with a downhill threat like Ayton and that same shooting, like, he's pretty set up as well. And he has a guy now to take the pressure off him like he didn't have last year. He hasn't had since Houston, and, you know, that relationship was already fraying then. So maybe that first season in Houston, which is 3 years ago now, was the last time that Paul had, like, a substantial, solid, strong foundation with a go-to scorer next to him. So that's all interesting to me. That was my takeaway. I'm sure we will hear more from the likes of Booker and Paul and Ayton as the week goes along. I will try to patch in some audio here. I'm thinking about doing a solo show for Wednesday where I just kind of throw in some audio, maybe even from Jones's presser today, as well as whatever we get tomorrow. I might hold out and wait a little bit longer to get more from throughout the week, but Suns basketball is here, guys. I'm excited. I hope you are too. Let's dive into our conversation with Robbie Calland about this Chris Paul trade and what it really means going forward for the franchise. Before we do that, though, I want to tell you about the sponsor of today's show, which is Built Go. If you find yourself hitting a wall from time to time, there's no better solution than Built Go. Whether it's a mental or a physical wall, break through it with Built Go every single day. Easy to take in, 1.5 ounce packages, perfect for your briefcase, golf bag, or pocket. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's just like a 5-hour energy without that same crash afterward, or like a Monster, but with a little less caffeine and better results. Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. It's also loaded with good stuff to ignite your work every day, like beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a little kick of caffeine. Again, all natural stuff here. Built Go then kicks in to keep us going strong with B6, B12, 10,000% of your daily B12 percentage. Who knew? Who knew you needed so much, or that you weren't getting as much as you could be? Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health, which means that Built Go literally makes you look better in addition to giving you that little kick. Visit BuiltGo.com right now and use the promo code LOCKED to break through your wall. You'll get 20% off your first order Again, with that promo code LOCKED at BuiltGo.com, 20% off your first order. Let's go. All right, here now with honorary Phoenix Suns fan here, Robbie Calland of UpRocks. And I wanted to talk to you, Robbie, because, you know, I mean, they excluded you a little bit with the Valley, but you're around, and you wrote a cool piece about the Suns that I think kind of laid the foundation here for some things that I've been thinking a lot about, just in terms of like identity and kind of what it means for a team in this situation to move forward. Because we see a lot of these rebuilding teams that just fade, right? I mean, like they kind of go into this, they almost get like the Magic. We had a big, you know, I feel like endlessly this summer we've been talking about the Orlando Magic in our UpRock Slack, and it's like, you know, they kind of didn't make that big move. Maybe they can't because they're the Magic. They never had the assets that the Suns had, or they never had that one star player like a Devin Booker. But the Suns this summer basically decided this was the time to do something while they still had the assets to do it. And I guess you kind of said like the Suns decided on an identity this summer with the Chris Paul trade and some of the corresponding moves fill out the roster. Like, what do you think that identity is? Kind of like in a couple sentences, like, what do you think they see in this roster that kind of puts it all together?
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with Monty Williams and that hire, because, you know, when he came in, you know, I'm up in Flagstaff, so I get to go to Suns camp each year when they come up here to NAU. And like one of the things that he talked about was trying to establish a foundation and trying to, you know, build something here that all of the constant turnover from coaches to players has just not allowed, which is to kind of figure out who they are as a team. And for Monty Williams, that means figuring out mostly a defensive identity. Like that's all they really talked about early on in camp last year. It's you know, you look at the guys they have on the roster, you said, okay, like the offense is going to be something that you can figure out. But like they had to raise their defensive level to like a passable level to even be in the conversation for the playoffs. And I think they did that. I think what you saw with the moves this year was everything they did had an eye towards somebody with that can kind of help that defensive identity and has skills on that end and intelligence on that end and brings a toughness on that end. And then on top of that, they were like, okay, so we need that. But also we have Chris Paul, we have Devin Booker, and we have DeAndre Ayton. So we have our cornerstone three pieces. What do we want them to do? We're going to want them to play an awful lot of pick and roll. What do you want around pick and roll? You want guys who can space the floor. So they went out and they signed guys who can at least theoretically space the floor and bring some defensive versatility. And I thought, you know, it's something we haven't seen in Phoenix in a long time, is a clear plan in place. And I think you got to give a lot of credit to James Jones and also the Monty Williams for kind of setting that initial level last year with what he did. And really going back to the guys they brought in last year, whether it's Ricky Rubio or Aaron Baines and these guys that maybe were only here for a year, but did a really good job of kind of bringing that professionalism and toughness. And now they tried to upgrade that with some of the moves they've made this season. It's obviously led by Chris Paul.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you think like they only added, I mean, I say only because it's not like they're star players like Rubio, Baines. You know, you get a full season of Kelly Oubre, you get a more developed Mikal Bridges, a more developed DeAndre Ayton. But they move from 29th or 28th in defense all the way up to 17th, which is pretty much, you know, league average. Like it really is. Right. It's crazy how, yeah, exactly. And it's crazy how kind of, I think like when we talk about the putting in the middle of the cards or whatever you want to say about a franchise making a trade like the Chris Paul one, is like how low kind of the bar is to move from awful to decent at offense or defense. And they moved to pretty good on offense. You know, they were 12th on offense, but just to bring in like veteran players and decide that you're going to stop tanking can just do wonders for your defense. But that said, like, you know, the move from like decent to pretty good to great, you know, obviously that's harder. So what do you make of the Paul thing specifically in terms of bringing him in and replacing Rubio there and giving up what they did, where they're basically saying, like, we feel like Chris Paul is almost, you know, maybe that's too fine of a point on it. Like, he's not the only thing. Jay Crowder is a big deal, I think, and some of the depth pieces are going to really help this team. But, like, you know, our big swing sort of was Chris Paul. They don't have a lot left to make a huge swing unless they want to start getting rid of some core pieces. So with that said, like, what do you make of Paul being the kind of the move for them right now?
Well, I mean, it makes a lot of sense because you're looking at a guy who I think, especially the last few years, you've seen being willing to take a little bit of a step back. And this was a question a lot of people had about Chris Paul coming to the end of those Lob City years, was like, would he be willing to cede some of that control that he has always had? I mean, like in New Orleans, in LA, his fingerprints were on everything. And I think what we saw, especially last year in Oklahoma City, is he can still make a team run the way that he wants them to run and really just be a super efficient team while also not having the ball in his hands all the time. Like, he's going to set guys up. Like, you're going to see him help Devin Booker by getting Devin Booker on the ball in the right situation. You're going to see him. He's obviously going to create some catch and shoot opportunities for Devin, which I think we saw him really, that was part of his, you know, step forward in efficiency last year as he continues to become, you know, just a really great and efficient scorer at all three levels. And a lot of that was, you know, having somebody else who can start the offense and get him the ball to where he can either catch and shoot or he's able to, you know, make plays off the bounce while the defense is already moving. It's so much easier when you're doing that. Because when you talk about Devin Booker, like when defenses are always keying on you, it makes life so much more difficult to get those good looks and to be able to kind of create looks off of one or two dribbles when you have to break somebody down. When you have somebody else, and I think we saw this last year with Rubio on the team, when you have somebody else who can at least initiate something, and even if it's just getting the defense moving and getting a pick and roll action, then kicking out to Booker where he starts a secondary action, even if that's where they want to get, when you have the defense already rotating, it makes life so much easier for Booker because he can read that and then he can attack the weak point of what he sees there rather than a defense setting up basically a wall in front of him and saying, okay, you're not the one that's going to beat us. Chris Paul takes that to another level. On top of that, I mean, we saw what happens to the rest of the team. I mean, it's not just about Booker. It's what, think about what Chris Paul's going to do for DeAndre Ayton in the pick and roll game. I mean, it's going to just open up so much more with what Ayton brings you as an athlete and as a physical presence on the offensive end, because suddenly you have to worry about that. You know, there's so much that brings you and then the shooter
can't really go over on the screen. I mean, right. Even something as simple as that, you can do that against Rubio. You can go under, you can't do that with Paul.
Right. It's going to create, and because you know Chris Paul will also, you can do kind of short pick and roll at the elbow where you know Chris Paul loves that little pull up mid-range jumper,
yep.
The same as Devin Booker. There's so many things that this, I think, just opens up. And then you talk about the guys on the periphery. You talk about the Jay Crowders, the Mikal Bridges, Dario Saric, even Etuan Moore, I think, was a sneaky, clever pickup. Langston Galloway. And I mean, like, they brought in a lot of guys who could knock down shots, you know? And like I said, they all have a defensive, you know, basically it looks like James Jones has a defensive type, which is wingspanny, switchable defenders. You know, I mean, like, you think about everybody they brought in, you think about on that wing, you can pretty much do whatever you want 1 through 4 at this point when you have Ayton on the floor with any of those guys, or 1 through, especially if you pull Saric off and go a little small. You can do a lot of things defensively that I think is going to be interesting to see. And then you still, you know, you have Cam Johnson and guys like that. But everybody can knock down shots, and Chris Paul is just going to tee you up. Like, you look at, I mean, hell, like, this is the interesting thing. If you go to the Lakers with Dennis Schroeder, like, part of the reason for his step forward as a shooter was because he was playing with a guy like Chris Paul who can set him up in great opportunities. I covered Dennis in his first, like, 5 seasons in Atlanta, and he was always a capable catch-and-shoot guy but never had anybody to set him up, and he used to take awful looks off the dribble, which he was a terrible shooter off the dribble. Mm-hmm. Okay, you think about some of these guys who you're putting in, like, Jay Crowder, you're hoping you get the Miami Jay Crowder and not the Memphis Jay Crowder. And that's kind of the big swing spot, I think, for him. And really kind of for this team is like, if Jay Crowder can be a 35% three-point shooter as opposed to 29 or 40, you know, he's always got this wide variance. If he can just be solid, that's so big. Because, like, then you have him on the floor constantly. You have Mikal. And, you know, like, Mikal became, what, a 41% corner three shooter? Like, he's great.
Yeah, he finished the season, like, league average, despite how terrible he started.
Yeah, and he was really good from the corners, and that's where they're going to deploy him. And he's really – because he's good at hitting the three from the corner, and he's also a great cutter, which is another thing that Chris Paul is always going to find the guy when you make that timely cut. It makes a lot of sense. It brings – you know, we saw what bringing someone like Rubio in, who's just a veteran who knows how to run an offense, can do. And then you bring in one of the best to ever do it. I understand, you know, like, can he be the same guy he was in OKC? Will there be a little more variance? Possibly, but I don't worry about him being willing to share the ball with Devin Booker, because also Booker's going to play off of him. It's not like Harden, where Harden would stand 40 feet from the basket and not even be involved. Like, Booker's going to be happy to play off of him some in a way James Harden isn't. So I think the comparisons to how those two didn't fit great in Paul and Harden, which, I mean, they got to Western Conference Finals. They did pretty well. But, like, there were some issues there. I don't foresee that, because Booker's a very different personality on and off the floor to James Harden.
He is. I think Booker almost – prefers it. Mm-hmm. I think the mix he had with Rubio last year, he was totally cool with that. I mean, maybe later in his career, you know, maybe that changes a little bit. And they put this roster together in a way where they don't really have like a backup true point guard. You know, Campaign's on this roster, but mm-hmm. you can't trust that he's going to keep up what he did in the bubble.
I love Javon Carter. That's my guy.
There you go. I mean, everybody loves Javon Carter, but as far as a point guard goes, I don't know. I don't know if that's what I would call him either.
Well. And I think, you know, you have guys that can kind of fill the role. I mean, like, Etwan's played some point in New Orleans over the years when he played next to Drew Holiday before they got guys in. I mean, you have ball
handling. Galloway can do something.
Galloway can do some things. I mean, like, you can't address every need. You know, it's really hard to do that. And I think they kind of recognized that. And they said, okay, let's get some versatility around these guys. Let's take the swing with Paul. And look, like, you're talking about a really crowded conversation in the West. I mean, like, I looked at it, and you've got probably eight teams fighting for six spots, because you know the two LA teams are going to be there. And then you look at everybody else, and you're like, okay, like, what is, you know, who's going to separate?
Yeah.
And if you're the Suns, you are banking on the fact that you have a budding superstar in Devin Booker, who's coming into his prime years and is really starting to figure out his game. Like, he knows where he wants to be on the floor. He knows how to get there. And now you're pairing him with an all-time great point guard who, even if he's on the decline, is going to just bring a steady hand, especially late in games. And that's something that I think is also going to help Devin, is like, when you got late in games with Phoenix, like, you knew who the ball was going to be with. Like, there was no doubt. At least now, I think you're still going to start with Devin, but, like, if they start swarming him, like, okay, Chris Paul's going to go get a bucket, and you know he can almost always get to the line or get to his little spot in the mid-range. And I really like the move, because, like you said, like, it's so easy to get caught up in, well, we have a nice young core. Maybe let's see how this plays out.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to fall into that trap, but – it wasn't super expensive to get Chris Paul. You know, like, you gave up Ricky Rubio and you gave up Kelly Oubre, who's like a nice young player, but really your future is probably Mikal, not Kelly Oubre at that position, right? Like, if you're really thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
You needed that point guard. There obviously wasn't one that you could kind of move up in this draft to go get that made sense. You want to compete now, because you're still – you're thinking about that next deal for Devin coming down the line. And you're like, okay, it's time. You know, it's time to put this into Devin's next 3-4 years. And we got to say, we're ready to compete with you. Because you think about how much – I remember talking with him last year at camp. And like, he's had a new coach every year. He's never had this foundation. I remember him saying, like, he's like, I know what the perception of this organization is. He's like, I have to change that. We have to change that. And it starts now. And I think that's why I look at last year as a success. I think you did that. And I think you saw the benefits of it, this free agency. Jay Crowder's not coming to the Suns if they look like they did 2 years ago. You know, like, he's not coming.
Or even last year. Like, right. The Paul thing, it was just the next step. Mm-hmm. And then that next step gets you Crowder and all that. Here, let's take a break, because I want to really dive into like how good they can be and kind of what comes next.
For sure.
All right, so we're back. Let's talk about, because I think you're right. Like, you said a lot of stuff there. First, on the Crowder point, I think that was a really interesting thing you said about his shooting, just like his consistency overall, mm-hmm. kind of being what this kind of hinges on. Not the whole season, but I think their offense has a chance to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how good he is, I think, is going to go a long way in that, because they have depth more on the perimeter than they do in, like, at the forward and center spots. Like, I don't really know how much, like, Šarić will play at each spot. It kind of seems to me like with Crowder and Bridges and Cam Johnson at that forward, they're all going to be playing heavy minutes. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of looking at Crowder. It feels like if they can get the, like you were saying with Rubio and the upgrade to Paul, like if they can get the offense really moving and then kick it out to him, that's what I think was making him so good in Miami, mm-hmm. was his shots were wide open because they had, you know, Bam on a short roll, or they had Duncan Robinson running around like an insane man. And then Crowder 10 feet of room to make that shot. So I don't think their offense maybe is going to be quite as good as Miami's was in the playoffs, but like if it can be pretty good and you can use the gravity Booker has and all that, I think Crowder could be pretty consistent. But I agree with you as far as like he's not coming unless he trusts the situation. I get that he got 3 years. Maybe it was going to be hard for him to get that deal elsewhere, but like he doesn't even consider it, even if they're giving him all the money in the world for 3 years, unless he feels like he can win. Cause the guy's 31, I think. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. Like for the price that they had to pay to bring some legitimacy and kind of take a step forward, like, I mean, you really think like it's really just the first round pick, because they're going to have to make mm-hmm. this decision on Oubre anyway. I don't really know personally, like I'm not sure how much value he really adds to like winning basketball right now. You're still betting on the future for him, and you're going to have to re-sign him again soon. Like,
right.
You're upgrading from Paul to from Rubio to Paul for the cost of a first round pick and like whatever Kelly Oubre is, basically. And like, come on, everybody's going to do that. So I agree with you. Like, the opportunity cost wasn't that big.
No, and I mean, you're talking about a guy who's just like in Oubre, who again, like it felt redundant with Mikhail coming up, and you look at it and you go, okay, like that's the guy that I think we want to bet on. And I think that helped Mikhail's end of the season, I think, really helped you believe in that ability to just become that 3-and-D guy that you really want around Devin Booker and around DeAndre Ayton, because you need somebody who can space the floor. And like, if you're going to say like you're going to be a cornerstone piece, you have to be able to do that. And I think that they feel comfortable with that. You know, James Jones is always going to go try to find shooters in the draft whenever he can. I mean, like, I like the moves they made. It's not a perfect roster, but it's the best Suns roster we've seen in a decade. And like,
low bar,
but like you gotta take that step. I mean, like I'm somebody who, like, my first years covering the league were in Atlanta during the Joe Johnson, Josh Smith years. And like, to get to that point, like they had to take a swing on a guy like Joe, you know, coming from Phoenix and saying like, okay, you're going to be our guy. And like, it worked out well. Like, they hit a cap and then they kind of like were able to maneuver out from under that and keep grinding. And it's a tough thing if you're not in one of the, you know, four markets in the league, or if you don't get a transcendent superstar in the draft. Like, it's hard, but they have a superstar. It's not a guy who's the best player in the league, but you have a top 15 guy in Devin Booker. You have a center in DeAndre Ayton who probably a top five center in the league, close to it, and definitely can get there. That's a good start. Yeah. What do we need to get them to succeed? Like they, you know, it's not like they needed to be in continuous asset mode. Like you get kind of, you, it's easy to get infatuated with like, ooh, young, shiny pieces that could be something. And at some point you just gotta be like, okay, like what do we like, pick out your shiniest ones and say, let's build with these guys. And they did a good job. Sure. And like they added some solid veterans, and I don't think they mortgaged the future. They just said, let's put a down payment up on right now. You know, let's settle in.
Yeah, and I'm kind of fascinated, like, too, when you look at, I mean, it's been, I mean, we all joke about, like, the Danny Ainge stuff at this point, but that really, like, to me sort of is a cautionary tale with some of this stuff, is it's like, you know, he had some bad luck, like, with Kyrie being Kyrie and, you know, Gordon Hayward getting hurt, like, sure, like, every team's going to have some stuff like that, but, you know, they have focused on evaluation or accumulation of assets for so long, and like, you know, they didn't draft that great, and like at in the middle or back end of the draft where some of those picks end up coming if you don't trade them, and like they have a great young core. Like Jason Tatum, I think he's like 10th in MVP odds right now or something, which feels crazy to me. Like that's a guy that really is going to be one of the better players in the league if he's not already like a top 10 guy, so that's fine. But I agree with you, like at a certain point, like put your chips in there and do something. And so I'm interested to see like how we look back on this in retrospect and kind of, you know, what does it do to the direction of the franchise? Cause the other thing is like Chris Paul is only on a contract for 2 more years. So they are going to have to kind of pivot again at some point. And what does that look like? I think that's all really interesting, but you mentioned with Joe Johnson, and I think at the end of the day, like this stuff does come down to like how good is your best player, because Joe Johnson, Al Horford, those guys aren't good enough to be the best player on a championship team. And I'm curious if you think Booker could be.
I don't know, just because of the defensive end.
Yeah.
Like offensively, 100%. I think he needs... It's so tough because like the bar for championship level is so high. And I think the Suns are still a step or two away from that in the tier range, you know, if you're talking about tiering the league. And so I like as much of a cop-out as the answer is like, we'll see.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, it comes down to like, how good is Ayton going to be? Because Booker needs a really, really, really strong number two. Like, I think Booker needs to be in one of those 1A, 1B type scenarios. Like he's not a LeBron. He's not a, you know, he's not a KD even. He's not, and even KD needed a lot more. I mean, at this point, that's the other thing. You need so much to win a title in the NBA these days. Like you have to have such a strong starting lineup. And I think that's what the Suns have done, is they've built themselves a really good starting lineup. Filled it out with some depth. There's still some weak spots. Like you said, you have question marks behind Ayton at the five. You're going to have to play Sarge there some. You're going to have to kind of do a little smoke and mirrors because you weren't able to bring Baines back. But you kind of paid that price to say, okay, we're going to throw a bunch of wings out there that can do a lot. And that's all right, you know? And so if you're talking about can Booker be the best player on a championship team, I'm not sure. I think he's maybe in that next tier below, but if you can get somebody who's also in that tier and like you hope maybe Ayton's that guy, hell, maybe Chris Paul can have one more year where he's that guy. Then maybe you got a shot, because it's going to be really hard to stop this offense. Like just knowing what Chris Paul does to raise the floor of your offense and knowing how high that floor already was just by having Booker there and surrounding him with decent talent, they're going to be great on that end. Like I expect them to be like a top 7 unit on offense. And there's a lot of great offenses in the league. And if you combine top 7 unit with a league average defense, which I think they can again do, and they've added more pieces to be able to do that, then you're talking about a team that will be in the conversation for one of those mid seeds in the West. if they have great health luck. And obviously that's always the, you know, implied question for every team is health.
Sure.
But if you have the right health luck, you know, they're going to be in the conversation for that 3, 4, 5, 6 slot. And like, I think it's going to be like last year where 3 to 8 might be separated by 3 games. And so you're just going to have to be on
3 to 10 now.
Yeah, 3 to 10. Because like the Rockets are still there. The Warriors are going to be in the mix again. You know, OKC drops out, but you have there's a lot of teams.
Utah, Denver. Yeah.
San Antonio is still San Antonio until they sell off. You know, with DeMar and LaMarcus, there's still a floor there of mediocre. I mean, there's just a lot of teams. But they're definitely, their ceiling is certainly in the mix. I think they're a playoff team this year, even factoring in as many teams as are going to be in the conversation this year.
I would say, I've been saying, like, make the 6th seed your goal.
Mm-hmm.
Not having to play in the play-in game.
That would be like, ideal. Yeah.
Just shoot there, because I think you could, this team has the chance to surpass that, sure. But I mean, this is a team that didn't even make the playoffs, hasn't done it in a decade. Right. So, like, do it. Like, start at 6, and then if you get home court for whatever home court's going to mean this year, who knows? But, like, then that's awesome. Like, then that you're over exceeding. But, you know, I think that's reasonable. And the Booker question to me is, like, obviously a little far down the line to see, you know, is he good enough? He's only 24. Right. Like, he doesn't need to be good enough to win a championship at 24, because almost nobody is. But I think, like you said, we'll see, but even more so, we'll see like now. This year is going to tell us a lot about Booker, mm-hmm. because he finally has that talent. You say that about all these young guys, like, what will they look like in a winning situation? Well, you know, Booker's going to be in one. Like, mm-hmm. we saw with Kat a couple years ago in Minnesota, like, he got Jimmy Butler around him and some competent players around him, and you know, it looked good at times, and you know, maybe that taught us a little bit about what the absolute peak of Cat is, at least with the roster constructed the way that one was. So we haven't really had like a lesson learning season for Booker in that way yet. So I'm really interested to see what this one teaches us. But you can read his work at UpRocks, at Dime Magazine, and hopefully we can have him back on soon. Thanks for coming on, Robbie.
Definitely, man. I appreciate having me.